Hi, this is Kim Catola. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. You can hear the show live on Sundays at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central, and there are many more podcasts for this and all of our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thank you for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Catola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Good evening and welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio. It is great to have you with us here tonight. And I hope that it has been a day of joy and it has been a day of enjoying your family. I hope that you had a chance to worship today and that you enjoy good fellowship at a church. The life of faith sometimes can really feel like a parallel universe. And I think there are so many social values that are in flux and in transition that when you're trying to live out life the way that God says we should and that the way that God says will be a blessing to us, you can really feel as though you're living in opposite world. And we've talked about opposite world before. Opposite world is where a girl, one of the examples we used recently, opposite world is where a girl will choose to dress modestly and get flack for it, for acting self-righteous. If somebody happens to notice that she doesn't dress the way the other girls are dressing and asks her about it. Opposite world, when we get to the issue that we deal with primarily on this program, when it comes to childbirth, raising families, opposite world is almost like completely, it permeates everything in the world. The world says that children are a curse. Sometimes you'll even hear people saying that, you know, if it's an unwanted pregnancy, it's a parasite. You'll hear that rationale for abortion. You'll hear people talk about the value of small families because of the issue of overpopulation. And I can remember when I was back in school studying for my ministry degree, and we had a panoramic overview of Scripture talking about, you know, the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, and what are the high points and what are the key points that we're to take away from each of these, you know, 66 books of the Bible. And we start right away in Genesis with God saying, be fruitful and multiply. And the question that was put to us as students of God's Word and God's will and His heart for us and His plan for His creation is, you know, has God changed His mind about that? Is God no longer interested in us being fruitful and multiplying? And I cannot think of any two better people to answer this question than the guests that we have arranged to talk with tonight, Hector and Sue Badeau. They are authors of a book about the ultimate road trip, adopting and raising 22 kids. Their book is called Are We There Yet? And so it's a joy to welcome you, Hector and Sue Badeau, to Cradle My Heart Radio. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Oh, thanks for having us, Kim.
Thank you. It's really great to be with you and your listeners.
One of you may have a radio up turned up. There's a little bit of an issue on reception there, but we'll carry on as we go. And one of the things that I want to start with is, you know, who and what, who has what job taking care of the 22 kids? And, of course, adopting and raising 22 kids is the way that you have built your family. But it's a blend also of biological children and 20 adopted kids, including children with special needs, children from other parts of the world, children with terminal illnesses, and children that they believe, that Hector and Sue believe, God sent to them to love. Their amazing story includes Sue's work as a professional child advocate and Hector's work as a stay-at-home parent. And so Hector and Sue, I'll give you both a chance to answer. How did this all start? How did you go on the adoption journey? Was it just one child, or did you say, I want a huge family, one of you? Hector, maybe we'll begin with you, and you can talk
sure.
about how the journey started.
Well, it goes way back. Sue and I dated in high school, and she was a sophomore and I was a junior. And I asked her out, and almost from the get-go, I think we talked about, you know, our values and what we thought was important, and we're going to have to and adopt to. So that was kind of on our agenda right from the beginning. We managed to survive college and stay together, and we got married in 79. And I think the turning point for us to putting things into action as far as what we felt God wanting us to do came when a missionary came back from India after working with Mother Teresa and told us, you know, of the needs of children over there. And so I think Sue was maybe 8 or 9 months pregnant with Chelsea, our first child. We marched ourselves right down to the local adoption agency and started the paperwork. I can remember the look of the social worker. Now, what are you thinking? You have one coming and you want to adopt another one. Well, we did. And our motto was the child most in need of a home and least likely to get one. So that was kind of what really got us going.
Mm. So was the landscape different? I mean, was there pushback over releasing a child for adoption to a woman who was expecting a child?
I think they looked at us like we were crazy, and we probably were at the time from any kind of – it was otherworld, as you said in your introduction. But, you know, the timing worked out perfectly, and we did have our first two – we had two born to us and adopted two within a span of just a few years. And those first four kids that we have to this day remain very close and really were the core, the heart of our family. And if we hadn't had such a great experience with each of them, we probably wouldn't have been open to moving on to other children and other circumstances that brought children into our lives. And as you noted, I am the one that has been traveling around the country doing advocacy on behalf of children. And I had expected to be in a very quiet conference room this evening for this call, and a glitch in my travel plans changed that. So I do apologize for the background noise, which is why I'm glad you'll be talking to Hector a lot as well. But yes, it was. So I'll be on mute when I'm not talking so that you won't hear it all the time.
So how did that first pregnancy and then adoption go? I mean, was it like having twins? Did they arrive at the same time? I mean, it had to have been a challenge.
Actually, our first adopted child arrived within the same week as the first birthday of our birth child, because the adoption process does take some time. So her first birthday party was also kind of his welcome to the family party. But we have since then adopted another child that actually is almost a twin of our first birth child. They're just a couple of weeks apart in age. They almost look alike, and they are just as close as any twins could possibly be. Hector, I don't know if you want to add to that.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see how two kids who aren't related by blood are so similar, have the same interests, and really bonded as sisters, Chelsea and Flory.
One of the things that I think about, as I imagine what that journey must have been like to have two kids within 1 year, two brand new babies, you know, joining your family, is this whole thing about how, you know, what really was the motivation? It sounded like something you just wanted to do, to have two, adopt two, and then the Holy Spirit said, now is the time with this message that you heard about the need in India. And was it that simple, or was this something where you were persuaded well ahead of time, maybe even from your own childhood, that big families are something that God ordains and that He's in favor of, and it's something you just always wanted to do?
Sure.
Yes, I actually read a book when I was a child called The Family Nobody Wanted by Helen Doss. My great aunt, who was one of my mentors and sort of heroes in the faith, and she was just real special to me. She always gave me books for every gift-giving occasion. And she did give me that book when I was about 10 or 11. And it was about a family in the 50s who adopted children who had disabilities and from all different backgrounds. And, yes, that book really planted the seed in my heart that, you know, as a child I thought I wanted, then I kind of grew away from it maybe in my teen years, but then as we got married and started our family, that vision definitely came back to me.
Hmm. How about you, Hector? Did you need to be persuaded of this?
Well, I guess I went along or agreed or felt the calling for this. I grew up in a family of 16. I have 9 biological brothers and 6 biological sisters. So I come from a large family, although I have to say many of my siblings don't have large families like I do. But maybe that was the way God was preparing me for what he had in mind and dealing with numbers. But Sue and I don't know, we just felt it in our hearts that adoption was the way to go. And it was a process as we went along, meeting other kids, attending adoption conferences, having a real good church support group. And, you know, God just opened our eyes to the needs of kids in India and El Salvador, and then eventually what was going on with kids here in the United States.
Mm. Hector and Sue Badeau are our guests tonight, and we're live, and so you can interact and share your story of a big family, encourage them, tell them way to go, or maybe you've got questions about how this all works and what it really entails. We'd love to have your voice in the conversation. Join us. We're live at 800-811-3003. That's 800-811-3003, toll-free call, and we'd love to have you join us live tonight listening to Hector and Sue Badeau here on Cradle My Heart Radio. Back right after this.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003. Back to Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003.
Well, now, Hector, because you are the dad, we're going to ask you the question about logistics. And if you're just joining us, we are talking with Hector and Sue Badeau. They have written a book about their family's story. It's called Are We There Yet? The Ultimate Road Trip, Adopting and Raising 22 Kids. And I have to ask you this, Hector. Was there a moment or a month when all 22 kids were under the same roof at the same time?
No. The most we had was 19. Close. We had 19 at one time. And I believe 16 of the kids were in school. And just getting 6-7 teenagers off to school and the rest off to school, and making school lunches, and 3 of our kids were in wheelchairs and had to be fed before they went to school. The logistics were a little complicated.
And you were the stay-at-home parent. You were the primary parent.
We felt that I had the skills to be at home and do crowd management, and Sue was good at what she did. Although Sue contributed quite a bit to the house and laying out how things should be organized in our charts and the laundry charts and chore charts and things like that. But hard to believe, but things went pretty smoothly. It was organized chaos.
So tell me about the house itself, because people, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think my pastor once observed the fact that, you know, if you're living in a house of 3,500 square feet and there are 4 of you, you know, are you just avoiding one another all the time that you're under the roof? I mean, how big was this home? How many bedrooms, how many baths for 19 people under one roof at the same time?
We actually had not a terribly big house when we had 16 kids at home. We had twice we had up to the 19. We had our first 19, and then we moved, actually, and 3 of them were young adults and moved into their own places. So we moved with 16, and then we added our last three, so we had 19 again. But the house in Vermont originally was only a three-bedroom house when we bought it, and then we turned every nook and cranny, including the attic and the basement and something that was originally an add-on shed, we turned all of that into bedrooms and living space. And it was teeny, but it worked for a while. And then we moved to Philadelphia, and we got this grand, amazing house that was a miracle is the story of how we got it in the first place. And it had once belonged to the adopted daughter of the man who originally had the house built, and it had many, many bedrooms, and that's the house we still live in. And both of them, in the teeny house and in the giant house, we have spectacular memories. We had fun times. We had sad times. We had new additions of babies being born and children being adopted. We had graduations and weddings and, yes, even funerals because we had three children pass away. So each house has its own special memories. But we really, I mean, it really is like Paul saying, I've learned to make do with a little or a lot. We had a teeny house and we had a giant house.
You know, and I'm sure you faced the whole spectrum of public opinion, because everybody has an opinion about family size. And it, whether it's politically motivated by folks these days thinking that overpopulation is an issue. I guess it was probably when my mom was raising. I mean, I come from a family of five siblings, and she used to get comments. I remember overhearing her discussing that with my dad at the dinner table, even when we were little. You know, that there was pushback even then, backlash against a family of five kids. Seven of us would, you know, draw comments back in the 1960s when she was raising us. Maybe share some of the more outrageous or just, you know, more unusual comments that you've had and as people have reacted to your family size, because it is unusual.
Sure, you've got a few good stories.
Okay, well, the first one that came to my mind was actually being in a doctor's office with several of our little, and this was a pediatrician's office, and we had little kids, and I had several of them, and they were all different races. So this comment that was made to me was as much about race as it was about size. But I had several little kids all with me, and they were playing in the play area, waiting area at the doctor's office. But they kept turning over to me, you know, and saying, Mommy this and Mommy that. And so it was clear that they were all my kids. And a gentleman that was sitting there waiting for his turn for his doctor, which shared the same office with that pediatrician, the man was just watching and watching, and then finally he looked over at me and he said, well, clearly these children don't all have the same father, so you sure get around, don't you?
Oh, wow.
So that's probably the most outrageous comment that I can remember. You know, but I do remember also one time a concerned family member, you know, saying, well, what do you think? You're going to save the whole world? You know, you got to stop at some point. You can't save them all. And, you know, so we've had comments like that. I don't know, heck, you probably got some comments when you went to school meetings. Hector was the one who always went to the school meetings.
The one that I have is when we were on one of our summer trips. I don't know if you noticed in our book, we took our kids cross country five times. Camping, and we hit just about every major tourist spot. And we were unloading while we were at Yellowstone National Park. And that's after driving all night, and we pull into our campsite. And of course, the sliding door opens, and, you know, pillows and shoes and shirts and kids fall out as the sliding door. We had a 15 passenger van. And so the kids start coming out, and there's two kids from the next campsite are just gawk-eyed at all the kids coming out. And then Chelsea was standing there watching them as all our kids pile out, and she stares at him and then says, you got a staring problem, buddy? And the kids just went running off. I had never seen so many kids of different nationalities or whatever, plus along with all the luggage that fell out. So that was quite comical.
You know, so part of what God has laid on your heart and part of what you've done as a family is to incorporate kids with special needs and really, you know, I mean, really big needs, if that's a way to say it without putting too much on it. Talk about that part of the journey of building your family through adoption.
At one point, we thought we couldn't adopt children with significant special needs. We would go to conferences, as Hector said earlier, and we'd see other families who did have children with very severe mental retardation or in wheelchairs or tube feedings or breathing machines. And we just say, oh, you know, we can't do that. We can handle, you know, we can manage several children at one time. We can juggle teenagers and babies. But, oh, we can't do that. And then it was little by little, one by one, that God brought some particular children into our life and into our heart. Children with very severe disabilities, children who would never developmentally be beyond the age of 4 to 6 months, you know, in development, that would always forever be in diapers, that would need tube feeding, that were terminally ill and that would die before we would. Things we thought we would never be able to do, and certainly without our faith, we wouldn't have been able to. But I'm going to let Hector say a little more, because as the at-home caregiver, he really invested so much of his heart and soul and blood and sweat and tears in each of them. But I can say as the mom that I got so much joy and so much growth and just so much enriched in my life by those children in particular, that the only regret I have is that we didn't do it sooner. The only regret I have is that we ever said we couldn't do it, because those children, Dylan and Wayne and Adam and David and Alicia and all the children with the most severe special needs of those that we adopted, they just enriched our lives in such ways that I couldn't possibly imagine my life without them. But mm-hmm. I'll let Hector say a little more about the day-to-day of caring for them.
And Hector, I do want to hear your answer, but I appreciate what you've said, Sue, because to me this is one of the most dangerous and evil aspects of opposite world, that now if a parent gets a poor prenatal prognosis, the society may even say that it's wrong of you to bring that child into the world. It's wrong of you to not terminate immediately if you hear that there may be some severe disability in the life of the child. And what you've just said, Sue, is so important, that the contributions that the children make to our families and to the world and everyone that they touch can't be measured. Hector, tell us about this, about taking on children whose you knew were you know, severely disabled, and you know, some that had a terminal prognosis even from birth. It must have been so difficult and yet so rich.
Yes, it was, to say the least, quite an experience. But I don't think we could have done it unless both Sue and I were, that's what we felt God wanted us to be doing. And also without our faith, we to get through some of the difficult times of Wayne, Dylan, and Adam, because all three of them had terminal illness, I don't think we could have done it without our faith. But on top of that, I have to say it brought us great joy, because each kid had a kid, sort of a twin who was the same age, who was quite well-functioning. And I used to point to Dylan when one of my sons, say Todd, he was the exact same age. He started complaining. I said, you think you got problems? Look at your brother Dylan. Dylan was a shaken baby syndrome child that we adopted. He was about three and a half when we got him. And his prognosis was, you know, total care. And for the first, I don't know, maybe 10 years, he was able to go to school and in a wheelchair and interact. But as time went on, his gross motor skills and fine motor skills started deteriorating, and also his ability to eat. Therefore, he ended up being on what they call a GJ tube and other medications, so he'd be able to get his nutrition. So that was Dylan, and we knew his days were numbered. We didn't know how long he would live. Other complications that went along with the shaking baby syndrome besides the cerebral palsy. And then there was both Wayne and Adam, who had this disease called Sanfilippo syndrome, which is a degenerative disease, genetic disease as well. And life expectancy for children with this disease is, I believe, 8 to 13. And Adam passed when he was 11, and Wayne passed when he was 24. Wayne went quite a bit longer. He was on a feeding tube towards the end to be able to get the nutrition. And I've never seen kids so happy, considering, you know, the complications they had, because they were total care and towards the end couldn't walk or, you know, bedridden. And had to do a lot of physical therapy and moving them around, day-to-day stuff, until they finally did pass. We're pleased and thrilled that we were able to serve God through these children.
That's Hector Badeau speaking, and we are talking with his wife, Sue, tonight about their journey of adopting 22 kids and building their family through biological children as well as these 22 kids. And not only special needs kids that they knew had a short lifespan in store, or were told that by the doctors, of course we never know, but they knew that there was a good chance for a short lifespan in those three cases, as Wayne just poignantly described, but adoption of teens as well. We hear all kinds of stereotypes about what happens when teenagers are brought into a home. So we're that'll be the next chapter that we're going to talk about after a short break. And again, our phones are open. If you'd like to share a story about your large family, whether through adoption or biological children, join us. Love your comments and questions tonight too. 800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003. Cradle My Heart with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
Thanks so much for listening tonight. Our guests are the authors of Are We There Yet? The Ultimate Road Trip, Adopting and Raising 22 Kids. And Hector and Sue Badeau have an amazing story of building a family of 22 kids and along the way developing expertise in child welfare and caring for those with significant disabilities and challenges. Hector was the stay-at-home dad, and during those active years, he was very active. Today, he's currently working with the homeless in Philadelphia. He holds a BA in history from New England College. He has more than 30 years' experience working with children in care, as well as adolescents and adults with cognitive and mental health challenges. And during those years of the active parenting of the 22 children, he was the primary caregiver, household manager for their family. 20 kids adopted from foster care with serious and varied special needs. And Sue received a BS with high honors in education and child studies from Smith College. She's a consultant and speaker in the field of child welfare, and she has served as public policy fellow in the office of Senator John Rockefeller IV, as well as Deputy Director for the Pew Commission on Children and Foster Care, Executive Director of Philadelphia Children's Commission, and most recently as a director for the Casey Family Programs, the nation's largest foundation focused on foster care. And she currently serves as president of the North American Council on Adoptable Children and is an advisor to the National Child Traumatic Stress Network. You know, this issue of trauma seems to be, you know, the central issue that goes undetected or unaddressed. As the older the children get, the more likely that there has been some trauma in their past. Let's talk about adopting teenagers, because I understand that you added some kids just a few years away from age 18 through adoption. And Sue, maybe we'll tap your expertise there, as the child advocate when we talk about this, because I know that's a concern for a lot of people, many who may even feel that the Lord is calling them to adoption, but they might just sincerely feel they just don't have what it takes for a teenager who has, you know, had a difficult past.
I'm not sure if you got Sue. She texted me.
Yeah, you're going to have to take this, Heck. It's getting loud here.
Okay. All right, Sue, I'll take this one. Yeah, we adopted six teenagers at once. From J.D. was the oldest. I believe he was 18, going on 19, and David was the youngest. He was 13. And hard to believe, David is turning 40 this week. It's just incredible.
Wow.
And they came with lots of challenges in their background of their experience before they came to us. It's just incredible. It's amazing how resilient children can be and what they can survive, because they had been through some pretty traumatic stuff living with their biological parents and the different issues that transpired from foster home to foster home, and lots of abuse, and how they managed to keep it together as they joined our family was incredible.
What is the main thing that you think people need to know about adopting teens, especially teens, as you say, who come with many challenges?
I think the most important thing is to be prepared for anything. But they do come with a lot of luggage, and they have a lot of emotional and psychological issues, and you need to be prepared to change. Not that you change your values, but to be able to see things from their perspective and be able to say to yourself, I don't have all the answers, but I need some help. Find some counselors. Find some good counselors. And that's a difficult, especially counselors that are familiar with trauma and brain development of what happens to kids as they've been traumatized through the years. So that's, you need to be resilient yourself, because there's going to be many challenges. And also, it's interesting, one of the passages from church this morning was how often do we forgive? And Jesus says 70 times 7. And you have to be able to do a lot of forgiving of teenagers, because they're going to make some mistakes, and you're going to be there to help them pick up the pieces and move forward and be the example of what it is to live out God's calling.
Sue, I don't know if you're able to jump in.
I have a quick second, or it's relatively quiet. I wanted to add that sometimes the parenting strategies that work for younger kids or kids that you raise since birth are not the same as what you would use with teenagers who've been through trauma. So you do need to learn and, you know, educate yourself. But the other thing is that we are absolutely never too old for a family. I mean, I'm in my 50s. I still need a family. So it's not like you're 17, 18, ready to tackle the world on your own. And yet that's exactly what happens to youth in foster care. They actually, you know, get released from foster care at 18, or in some situations maybe 21, but still a cliff is a cliff if you're falling off of it. And that's what happens to literally almost 30,000 youth in our country every year. They kind of get pushed off that cliff if they don't have a family to stand up for them and say, I will be your family forever. I will be the grandparent to your children. I will be there for you, and we will join together and make family together. And so that's really what I hope people will hear about the importance of teenagers, and they can enrich your lives equally. As we said about kids with disabilities, teenagers enrich your lives. We just spent a few days with some of our older kids that we adopted as teenagers, and they continually enrich our lives. Even they're in their 40s now, and their children are our grandchildren. And it is to the next generation and the next that, you really have this opportunity to not only make a difference in their lives, but receive a blessing in your own life.
Well, and I think that's really well taken, Sue. I think if most of us are honest, we can say, you know, as you said, not only do I still need my parents have both passed, I miss them every day, but I think as teenagers I needed my parents more than I did when I was, you know, utterly dependent as a toddler. I mean, it's so true. Hector, let's talk about how the kids upheld and nurtured one another, because I'm guessing that this was one of the big things that you were called to do as the stay-at-home parent. You know, foster those relationships between the kids. And I can imagine that they were able to give one another a great deal based on, you know, the needs that they had met in the family, and then passing that support along to one another.
Well, in our family, everybody had responsibilities, and some of them liked them more than others, but they all knew that for us to be able to make it, everyone needed to do their fair share. I can remember just the bonding between Flory and Dylan and Joelle and Wayne, where they were responsible for helping out with Wayne and Dylan. They take the time to feed him and change him and just show love to these children. And it's interesting how they did it and where they are now in their own lives and the way they expressed their love and taking care of their own children. But everybody looked out for each other, especially when we, like I said, we went cross country 5 times. Everybody it was sort of a buddy system, and a lot of bonding and a lot of good memories were built to the point now when we get together, it's the old, remember the time the buffalo came into the camp when we're out at Yellowstone, or when Todd almost drowned in the ocean and Dad pulled him out, you know. So there's been lots of bonding through those trips, but they definitely, it's amazing how they bonded as a family, just coming from various backgrounds.
Sure, sure. And I'm guessing that had to be job one. And again, that is definitely to your credit. We're talking tonight with Hector and Sue Badeau about their book, Are We There Yet?, which tells the story of the ultimate road trip, their life adopting and raising 22 kids. And when we come back from a short break, we'll have a question from a listener about, more, just to say a little bit more about the division of labor on the chores. And also, as I understand it, that there were foster children that you didn't ultimately adopt, but there were more children in the home receiving care and help. We'll continue with our conversation, and our phone lines continue to be open for your questions and comments, too. 800-811-3003. Join us tonight with our guests, Hector and Sue Badeau, here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
So glad that you could join us tonight. Thank you for being with us. I saw an article online recently with a poignant headline that said, I wish I could have prevented my girlfriend's abortion. And it was written by somebody and then published in The Guardian, because the movie Obvious Child has been released in the UK recently. And it's a very much of a pro-abortion movie, a romantic comedy, which centers on the lead character's abortion and how it was the best thing for her, as the movie puts it, and how she copes in the aftermath. And forgive me, it was the Daily Mail. The Daily Mail has a columnist who then shared her experience with abortion and saying essentially the same message as the movie. No big deal. That's the actual words that Belle Mooney, the Daily Mail columnist, used in talking about her experience. Well, another columnist for the Daily Mail, a man, has written this column that says, I wish I could have prevented my girlfriend's abortion. We'll get that linked at our Facebook page soon at facebook.com/cradlemyheart. But I want you to know that if you're a man who has been hurt by that, feeling powerless because you couldn't prevent your girlfriend's abortion or your wife's abortion, we do have a resource for you at cradlemyheart.org, and it's a free ebook that we've written just for men called Someone Stronger. And if you'll go to cradlemyheart.org or my website at kimcatola.com and put the search term in, Someone Stronger, you'll find a way to receive that as a free resource. It's an ebook, so you can download it and read it in privacy, and we would just love to get that in your hands. I don't want anyone feeling that powerless sense of despair that comes about in the hearts of men oftentimes when an unwanted abortion happened against their will. If that describes you, please get in touch with us, and we would love to get that resource into your hands. You'll also find at cradlemyheart.org information about our guests tonight and links to where you can find their book. We're talking with Hector and Sue Badeau about Are We There Yet? The Ultimate Road Trip Adopting and Raising 22 Kids. And we've got a link to their work and their story at cradlemyheart.org this week. And so, Hector, before the break, we were talking about the division of labor, and we had a listener named Mark who couldn't stay to ask you on the air, but he was real curious about the, you know, who did what, how much of the work did you actually do, and how in the world did you accomplish getting them to all do their chores?
Well, the kids used to call me Sergeant Badeau. His dad used to say jump, and we'd say how high, and you do this, and what color. So I wouldn't say I was terribly strict, but the kids knew I meant business when I asked them to do something. Of course, there was the three strikes, you're out rule. You know, they played it to the third strike, and then say, okay, I'll do it. But I I was in charge at home. I did the laundry. If you're looking for specifics, I did a lot of the cooking. I got the kids off to school in the morning, sometimes making 10, 12 lunches for each kid, and first get the high school kids off, and then the graded school, and then Wayne and Dylan and Adam, who needed special attention, and feeding them, getting them changed, because all three of them were in diapers. And then a lot of them were on IEPs because of special needs, so I handled a lot of the school meetings. And if there were a few kids at home during the time, the other ones, I'd just pack the kids up and take them in with me to go to school. So I did a lot of the at-home stuff. Laundry was not in Sue's contract. And again, making money wasn't in mine. That was her department.
That's right. We did talk about that when we first got married. I had paperwork and he had diapers and laundry. he thought he got the better deal, but I definitely know I did. But actually, there's a wonderful chapter. One of my favorite chapters in the book is called A Day in the Life. And it really is Hector's sort of fun and often humorous accounting of one day, from waking up at 5 a.m. to, finally flopping into bed at 11:30 at night. And so he just kind of gave you the quick overview, but that is kind of a fun part of what we did include in the book, because it is quite an interesting day that way.
It would take,
I did the groceries. I did a lot of one-on-one things when kids had to go to appointments or things like that. I did a lot of the planning for, menus, meals, vacations, school needs, mental health or, physical school doctor's appointments. So I did a lot of the planning and I did groceries and homework help on a lot of different things, but on the one-on-one, but all those sort of group dynamic things and daily chores Hector did take care of.
Well, so and let's talk a bit about the kids that you fostered, the children you fostered who did not end up becoming members of your family. This is an additional challenge that I'm sure you have some wisdom for us, for those, who are perhaps considering that or would never consider it. What is it that you would like us to know about that, the foster care parent journey?
Well, I'll take this one then. Yes, we actually worked in a group home for teenage delinquents for almost 2 years. It was part of the Boys Town program. And we also took in a number of foster kids, children, after we left the group home. And then a lot of kids just, especially while we were, since we were here in Philly, of friends of our children, kids having difficult times at home, they'd end up on our door. A few of them ended up staying with us 2-3 years as we tried to mediate and help them along in their relationship with their parents. So, we've had quite a number of foster children, especially teenagers, that we took in over the years.
And what do you think is the big misconception? How would you encourage people who are considering fostering?
I would encourage them to have an open mind. I would encourage them to go to some events. There's lots of agencies, foster care agencies and adoption agencies have like these socials where you get to meet some of the kids that are in the system. And it's not half as scary as you think it is. But I would also encourage parents, couples, to be in it together. You have to be in it together. If one is pulling the other one along, it's just not going to work, whether it's doing foster care or adoption. You need to be in it together. But you need to be prepared, like I said earlier, to be forgiving and to learn that you don't know everything and be able to reach out.
Sure. Well, Hector, I think we may have actually even lost our connection with Sue, so I'm going to give you the chance to answer this last question. What is it that you want people to understand about adoption? Not everybody's going to be called to radical adoption. Not everybody's going to have the skill set that you obviously had to pull this off. But what are some of the things that any of us can do for all the children who are waiting for homes?
Well, dovetails with why we wrote our book. There's three things we wanted folks to learn from what we've done. One is that you can be involved in children's lives. We wanted people to have a real wide-eyed view of what it is to adopt kids if they get our book and what some of the day-to-day things that go on, but to be very informative. But it's not meant for everybody. Not everybody is going to adopt 22 kids. Not everybody's going to adopt a kid, but we wanted people to, you know, have a good view. It's not sugar-coated. We tried to be as real as possible as to some of the challenges and some of the joys of adoption. That's one. The other one is that you can make a difference. Even if you play Big Brother or through your church, get a group of people who know some folks who have adopted and say, hey, you know, what can we do to help keep this family together? Because there are going to be challenges for folks in your congregation who have adopted or are fostering, and they need breaks. That's the other thing is respite. You know, Sue and I didn't get a whole lot of respite, but we've learned the value of it, that to help keep families together, the parents need a break and the kids need a break. So if you're not feeling like you can actually adopt or foster, you can, your church as a group can play a role in saying, hey, let's meet and watch the kids for a couple hours. Here's a gift certificate to go out and meet. Or do you need this child picked up from the baseball practice while you're taking care of this other? So there's lots of ways people can get involved, even if they don't want to adopt. For kids that are older, by being mentors, you know, following them in school, helping them fill out any college applications. Kids that are in foster care often need a little extra help in achieving their goals.
Sure. Well, wonderful. Thank you. We are out of time, and I appreciate so much you and Sue joining us, and you give her your best when she makes it back from her convention. And Hector, thank you so much for joining us. Hector and Sue Badeau are our guests tonight, and their book, Are We There Yet? The Ultimate Road Trip, Adopting and Raising 22 Kids, is available at Amazon and every place where books are sold, and we've got a link in case you need it at our website at cradlemyheart.org. Coming up next week, we're going to talk with Michelle Borges Thornton, and she has a wonderful little book called Abortion to Mercy, part of her Freedom series. I hope you'll be able to join us for that. Go to cradlemyheart.org for helpful articles and resources. Visit us on Facebook and like the page so that you can get our updates in your newsfeed. We're on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. Remember, we hold you in our prayers and that Jesus loves you, and so do we. Thank you so much for listening tonight. I'm Kim Cotola. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart. For more information about this show, you can visit our Cradle My Heart program page on myfaithradio.com.